I'm Dorothy Wickenden. On today's Politics and More podcast, The New Yorker's Andrew Marantz talks with Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Senator Elizabeth Warren. They'll discuss the 2020 presidential race and what to expect if Donald Trump refuses to concede the presidency.
Earlier this month, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Senator Elizabeth Warren joined us for the annual New Yorker Festival. It was, for reasons you know only too well, a virtual festival. And with the 2020 election just weeks away, the state of American democracy was and is on everybody's mind. Here's Elizabeth Warren and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez speaking with Andrew Marantz of The New Yorker.
I'm just going to get right to it. This isn't, you know, a time for small talk. This is a pretty perilous moment in our history. So I think we should just start right with it. We obviously have a health crisis, an economic crisis as a result of that, a reckoning over racial justice in this country. And on top of all that, we have a democratic legitimacy crisis. When we've come this far in terms of breaking of norms and seeing all these abnormal signs that our democracy is in peril and that this administration seems to have authoritarian impulses, what are you looking for as more red flags as we move toward this election? What are you looking for in the coming weeks that will tell you that we have really crossed an irreversible line? And what can you both do as members of Congress to try to safeguard what we have left of our democracy? I guess, Senator, we can start with you on this.
Well, I don't think it's about the red lines in the next 24 days. How long have we got now? We know that Donald Trump's going to do every single thing possible to steal this election, to hang on to power, to deny its legitimacy. There's not any surprise coming in that sense. There may be particular details, but come on. We know this man by now. He has told us who he is. So for me, it's about what are we doing about it and doing about it now. And that is, we got to get people out to vote. Our big chance here is November 3rd. We can't afford to beat Donald Trump by a little bit. We got to beat Donald Trump by a huge amount. And that's how we reassert the strength of democracy. Alex, what do you think?
You know, I completely agree. I'm not looking for any red flags because he's already thrown out plenty. One of the most extremely troubling things that the president has done recently is really signaling that he will not clearly commit to a peaceful transition of power. And so the thing that we have to do, our first line of defense, is absolutely to overwhelm at the polls, and to overwhelm at the polls in every way possible. To overwhelm in early voting, early in-person voting, mail-in voting, and overwhelming on day of election results.
Right. And so is there like a break glass in case of emergency plan? If you start to see a state of emergency getting called in a swing state and people getting shut out from polling places or some massive irregularity, what are you going to do? Do you go to the well of the Senate and have a sit-in? Like, what is your plan? And also, what is our plan as citizens? Do we show up somewhere in March? Do we start stockpiling food? Like, what do we start doing?
Well, I think one of the things that's extremely important is that we have to remember that in our democracy, and yes, I'm going to use the word democracy, contrary to Senator Mike Lee, we, the people, have power. We always have power. And I think it's extremely important that people be ready for mass civil demonstration, nonviolent, of course. But we have to make sure that we have a demonstration on the scale of the Women's March in 2017, even larger than that, or on the scale of everything that we saw this year. There need to be immediate political, popular, and social consequences for leadership that refuses to adhere to the rule of law. And we've seen this administration scale back on very disturbing developments due to public backlash and due to popular support or lack thereof. And so I do think it's still important for people to understand that if Donald Trump refuses to acknowledge the results of this election, that we exercise our First Amendment rights. And then for us as elected leaders, as elected officials, depending on those developments, there are provisions in the Constitution in making sure that whether we address this in the House or that we also turn out for critical House seats so that we win over state delegations, that we make sure that we have all the pieces in play for every eventuality.
Let's say Joe Biden gets in cleanly, peacefully. Let's say Democrats take the House, Biden administration, Democratic House, and a Democratic Senate. Right. So that's the hypothetical. In that world, you now hear people talking in this, especially this post RBG moment. You hear people talking about a whole wish list of stuff. You hear people saying expanding the courts, term limits for justices, getting rid of the filibuster, national popular vote, reinstating the Voting Rights Act, statehood for DC, Puerto Rico, maybe even Guam. Is anything on this list something that you're not down with? Are you okay with all those things? And what do you prioritize? And how do you get there under a Biden administration and a Democratic Congress?
Well, first, right off the boat, I will say that I am not supportive of blanket statehood for Puerto Rico. I've actually introduced a bill with Nidia Velázquez for a self-determination process, and one that is binding, just, and not influenced by outside interests. The issue of DC statehood and Puerto Rico statehood are two very, very different issues. Puerto Rico was a colony and is a colony, and it's a spoil of war. And the United States has been an imperial force in that colonial dynamic. And so the way we approach colonized entities is a process of self-determination and decolonization. DC statehood is an issue of just criminal disenfranchisement. And so that's one distinction that that I would put in there. Joe Biden is a fan of Puerto Rico statehood. That's one small difference. Well, it's a big difference to Puerto Ricans, but it is a difference that we have. But the rest of the agenda, I'm game for us to talk about. In terms of priorities, I think it's important for us to really examine the structural power. And one, I mean, I'm not in this body, so maybe I'm speaking out of turn. This is more Elizabeth's turf, but she has led on discussions of the filibuster. And I think we really need to be examining these tools that allow structural imbalances of power that that fuel minority rule to be really, really examined and see if they're actually what is best for our country on a structural democratic integrity level.
Yeah. I ran for president on changing the filibuster. I think that's an important part of what we have to do. But think about it this way. When we're talking about the list, I don't want to dismiss the importance of, we're going to take over, I hope. And this COVID crisis, at least on the current trajectory, is still going to be a serious problem. It is powerfully important that we get the COVID crisis under control and be able to reopen the economy. It is also important that we not walk past the importance of racial justice and addressing this issue. And every chance I get, I want to be sure that we elevate this and we make sure it stays a continuing part of our conversation.
Yeah. On this issue of bipartisanship, I think people are very confused in this moment because on the one hand, it seems clearer and clearer that there isn't always a good faith negotiating partner on the other side of the aisle when it comes to so many of these issues. There aren't two sides to them, and yet they are presented as if they have two sides. Does this mean that there is no such thing as bipartisanship, right? You still hear people talking, the fever will break. One day our friends on the other side of the aisle will return to us. They'll have an epiphany. You often hear the Democratic nominee talking in these ways. And it sounds to some people just so outmoded. I mean, does that strike you as hollow? Or what can we do with bipartisanship as a concept?
Look, my view on this right now is we need to hold people accountable. And the Republican senators, I'll speak to the side of the House that I'm on, the Republican senators have enabled Donald Trump. They, when Donald Trump says he just may not follow the results of the election unless he gets elected, where have they been? When Donald Trump plays footsie with Russia, where have they been? When Donald Trump says he is going to try to overturn the Affordable Care Act, but he has this secret magic health plan that no one knows what it is, where have they been? When Donald Trump calls people in Richmond who are white supremacists fine people, and when he refuses at the first presidential debate to denounce white supremacy, where have they been? We don't start this by saying, oh, it's all about bipartisan and you get to do half of what you want and we get to do half of what we want. No, this is about responsibility. You want to be a United States senator? You have to be willing to speak up and stand up for the Constitution of the United States, for our democracy, and for the health and safety, not just of a handful of people, but the health and safety of all Americans. That's where we start. And this election, November 3rd, is going to be about exactly that. Voters need to hold their senators accountable for what they've done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is an area where just there's also just a huge generational shift in our politics. Bipartisanship to young people seems like this kind of vintage fantasy. Like, it seems like people are yearning for this time that I've never lived through. But for young people, bipartisanship got us the Iraq War. Bipartisanship got us endless war. Bipartisanship got us bank bailouts. And we very rarely see the results of bipartisanship yielding in racial justice, yielding in economic justice for working families, yielding in improvements to healthcare. And in fact, the things that have yielded those things have been Democratic majorities. I hope one day we can get to a point where our democracy is much more healthy. But what we are seeing right now is that when the Republican Party is given the keys to any governing body, it will yield an abuse of power, fealty to Trump or any other authoritarian that would try to assume the highest office of the land. And, you know, I think that what we really need to examine perhaps is common ground on an issue-to-issue basis. This is not to say that I've never worked with a Republican in my life. There are some areas where we've been able to reach out with more libertarian elements of the Republican Party. There are some areas, but I don't necessarily think bipartisanship for bipartisanship's sake is a virtue. But just because something's bipartisan doesn't mean that it's good or that it's good for you.
Thank you both so much. This was great.
Thank you.
That's Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Senator Elizabeth Warren speaking at the New Yorker Festival this month with staff writer Andrew Morantz.